Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Eater's Digest, a show about all things food and dining. I'm Amanda Clute, editor-in-chief of Eater.
And my name is Daniel Janine. I am a producer at Eater. Amanda, what's going on?
Oh, my gosh. What isn't going on, Daniel?
What isn't going on? Pageants?
Yeah. Some stadiums? Some rock and roll concerts?
Amanda, we have a super fun episode today. We have Chef Edgar Rico and Sarah Martimaggi from Nixta Taqueria in Austin, one of my favorite restaurants. They are going to talk to us about going through the blizzard, about the insane updates to the mask mandates in Texas, what it's like for Austin to just be growing at a crazy rate, and slinging tacos. And then me and you, are going to talk about some fun stuff in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Gwyneth has cured COVID with kimchi.
Cool. Yeah. Love to hear it.
It may be the end of the line for the avocado toast. There's been some sad closures. We should definitely talk about this recipe website that made.
Recipesly.
I've actually never heard it said out loud yet, so that was the first time. And some more fun stuff. But as always, we'll talk about some important things, and then we'll try to lighten up the mood.
All right, first up, let's get to Edgar and Sarah from Nixta Taqueria.
Sarah and Edgar, thank you guys so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
So first of all, would you mind, for those who don't know, and I feel sorry for those who don't know, would you explain what your restaurant is?
We're a taqueria at most base level, taqueria. But we specialize specifically in heirloom varieties of corn for our tortillas. We gather corn from all parts of Mexico, but specifically from Oaxaca, specializing in definitely ancient breeds of corn.
We want to talk to you guys about the blizzard, but what state has the restaurant been in leading up to February? Were you guys doing takeout, delivery, indoor, outdoor? Like, lay that out for our audience.
It's about a 50-50 split, honestly, between curbside orders. So we're getting a lot of people still doing to-go, still following the CDC guidelines. And then there's the other half who are more comfortable and will dine in with us. So we have two primary areas. We have a small covered patio, and then we have a larger backyard that when the pandemic hit last year, it's not technically in our lease, but he's a fellow Persian and it was love at first sight. So he let us backyard for our purposes as well. So it's a really large 10,000 square foot space that we just set up 8 different benches in, and that's what we've been rolling with. So it's kind of been interesting. Our model for service has been a little bit of bar service outdoors and then QR codes at every table where guests can order. That's mostly what I've been focusing on.
So do you want to talk us through what happened with the snowstorm to start with?
Really cold. I remember we fell asleep on Sunday and it was like 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. And I like remember my pillow was really cold. And I go look at the temperature in our house and it was already at like 30 degrees. I was like, oh shit, something's wrong.
Wow.
It's pretty cold. We could actually see our breath inside the house. So in our home.
Like a horror movie.
Yes, exactly.
Seriously.
We were seeing ghosts. There were, but anyway, that whole week we were out of power in our home, which is on the same street as Nixta. We live like 4 minutes walking distance. And then Nixta also did not have power, electricity, water, or anything else. Texas is one of those places that even when it's raining, we don't really know what to do. We're like, help, what? I'm scared. So anytime my mother really like shakes things up. And then on top of that, we're on our own electrical grid. So we had no capacity to reach out to the eastern or western grid to help supply power. So essentially, I think it was 70% of the city of Austin was out of power for multiple days. For us, it was five days. And it was, I mean, you couldn't get anywhere. There was, in Dallas, there was like a 100-car pileup. In Austin, there was like a 20-car pileup. People were abandoning their cars in the middle of the way.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of it was like the romantic side. You're like, wow, it's beautiful snow. But then all of it starts setting in that everything is shut down. There's no grocery stores. There's no water. There's no access to food. You don't have access to water. So Edgar had fallen asleep into like a hyperthermic slumber. And it was like the Titanic where I'm like, please don't fall asleep.
Well, yeah, I remember like we had like 5% left on our like phones and we were like,
there was no internet access or phone access.
Yeah, for some reason like the cell phone towers just got knocked out. So like you could maybe place a call and it might go in, but you would be on the line for like 10 minutes waiting for it to connect. We went back, checked out the status of like kind of everything that was in our fridges, and we were like, everything was still at temperature, but we were like within 2 degrees. So we were like, man, we literally have to cook all this today or like I will be heartbroken if I'm throwing away like thousands of dollars worth of food that right now people clearly need it. Like we can't go to grocery stores. We can't go anywhere like food. So this idea ran in my head. I'm like, called up a bunch of homies. Was like, what are you guys doing? Can you get here? Whoever had the ability to came and we just started cooking. It was this crazy thing of like, all right, let's clear out all the fridges and cook for like 400 people. That first day, I remember we had announced it on social media and like within an hour, people started showing up. There was an hour before we even opened, there was people lining up to go eat. And like we sold 400 meals in probably about like 30 minutes.
We gave them away. We didn't.
Wow. Yeah, we didn't sell them. Gave them away. It was wild to see that many people that lined up in a snowstorm, Arctic blizzard weather, like weather to just get food. So we were like, damn, like this is a serious kind of need. And then through that little effort, kind of people just started like blowing up our inbox and we're like, can you continue this? We have donations for y'all if you can make this happen. And we just started reaching out to farmers. We started reaching out to our local produce companies, seeing if we could find a way for people to, you know, get us products so we can continue this effort. And it turned into like us cooking for like a couple hundred people, cooking like for thousands of people throughout this whole city. And it was just really amazing to see everyone really rally together and do something just really awesome and beautiful for our community. And at the time when people definitely needed it most, because the government did pretty much nothing except for run away to Cancun and have a little vacation.
And when the water process did come back on, they said that there was a boil notice, but people still didn't have power. So there was no way for them to even boil water. It was a total shit show, honestly. But yeah, really with the community initiatives and the efforts, like hundreds of thousands of people throughout the city got fed, not only with meat stuff, but with other restaurants and grocery stores that were participating in that. So, yeah, it's 85 degrees today.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, literally the parallels of like the week from when it happened. Like, I remember Monday, snowstorm. By that Saturday, it had all melted and it was like 75 degrees and like beautiful. So we were like, it looked like, I remember someone like commented on like actually like one of Ted Cruz's posts that were like, you liar, I thought there was a snowstorm there. Like, how dare you Photoshop this fake photo? And we're like, actually, no, it's like literally, it's really nice outside. It's not him like, you know, lying. But yeah, it's so weird to see the complete contrast in our weather here in Texas. So yeah.
And you saw a lot of other restaurants doing this as well, too. So it was like a whole effort across the city. But was it organized or was it just a lot of stories like yours where people were just trying to cook off what they had and then it led to more?
I think it was a mix of definitely that. There was just some people who I know, we had some friends who happened to own a shop in downtown. They kind of went to their shop because they were like, well, power ran out. And then they just kind of started cooking. And then they somehow ended up being a hub for this thing that's called Austin Mutual Aid. I mean, they're throughout most cities, but they ended up being a hub for them. And then they ended up essentially camping out there at their restaurant for 5 days. Like,
oh my God.
So there was a lot of people's stories like that where they were like, yeah, we had no other power except for the restaurant. So we just rallied up here next to, I mean, they were telling me the other day, they were like, yeah, because it was a mutual aid site that like homeless people would just show up. And they were like, yeah, we were like, gave the cots to all the homeless people and we were just sleeping on the ground.
Yeah, they were
renting.
Like,
damn, dude, you guys are like,
yeah, wow.
I do love that. I think this probably speaks to like you being efficient when this happens, but talking about giving away meals and he's like, yeah, we sold 400. Like,
yeah, you should have seen him. He had this like little headlamp on the whole time. And so he was just like trying to find people in corners, like, hey, I got some beans for you over here. Like, at one point there was just this giant Yeti full of chili. And I was like, I don't know. You know, you at that point, you're just like, what? How do you maximize the food that you have for the most amount of people? So, yeah. The
menu. Right. So what's it been like? I mean, now you've been put in this position where they've taken away the mask mandate, as you were saying, and they've also said restaurants can basically just do as they were pre-COVID, right? Like return to normalcy. So, does it suck to be in the position where you have to now enforce rules yourself depending on, you know, what you want to do?
Yes. Sure. I mean, people in the state of Texas are already, you already have those outliers that are very, you know, you're impending on my rights kind of people. And now it puts us really in a weird position because now it's like, well, the governor told me the thing's over. So like, why do I have to listen to you? And, you know, it just puts our staff in a really weird position where we're like, hey, you know, this is our policy. Obviously, you don't have to eat here. You know, we haven't had to do that yet with anyone, but, I feel like it's definitely going to get people more in that position now where those outliers that are going to have more a reason for them to, you know, say something. So
yeah, you'll always have like a little pushback. So for us, it hasn't been terrible during this time because again, it's been a federal mandate, but you know, you'll have people sort of test the limits. They'll come and say like, I have asthma. I don't want to wear it. Like you're walking three steps to the bathroom. You can wear a mask for that. Or, you know, we'll have a little hand sanitizer right as you enter. They're like, what are the ingredients in there? I don't know. Alcohol.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Or they'll say I have eczema. I don't want to wear it. I'm like, okay, I understand. So there's already like, yeah, a little bit of trying to figure out how to navigate that conversation without sounding like a dick. But we'll see what happens when it actually goes into effect on
Wednesday.
On the 10th. So this week, what Edgar and I are doing are we're trying to come up with formalized verbiage to share with our team to be able to relate to guests so that at least there's like a standardized way of handling it. At the end of the day, they're going to choose to eat here or not.
What do you think the path is forward for you guys? Is it when your staff gets vaccinated, then you can feel more comfortable opening up more? Or is it more when the cases are down? Or is there somewhere in between?
I definitely feel like, in my opinion, like, I think definitely getting our staff vaccinated first and foremost, I feel like that'll at least give me at least a little more reassurance. But then, you know, I think at that point, I don't really foresee, like, honestly, moving forward until maybe winter, next winter, I don't foresee us opening up our dining room because, I mean, if really we're at a point that if we have more tables outside than we ever did inside, I feel like, what's the point, really?
I think for better or for worse, one of the advantages that you have is that you have like a loyal following of people who understand what you are as a restaurant, and maybe because it's not a heavy, you know, you guys don't have a lot of foot traffic where you are. People kind of seek you out, so you're not getting people wandering off the street telling you that you're infringing on their rights. It's more like people kind of know what they're getting into when they're coming to the restaurant, which I think probably obviously really helps.
No, yeah, for sure. We're not in a very hip area of town. It's not, we happen to be across the street from Section 8 housing and in between million-dollar condos and houses on the other side. So it's like this weird parallel on where we're at and the location. So yeah, we're definitely, you have to drive here to get here unless you're a neighbor. So it's not, like you said, there's not just foot traffic of people walking by, like if you were to be on like Congress or like Sixth Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Amanda, can I ask one more?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I guess to wrap up, I mean, you know, for anyone who hasn't, who's in the Austin area, obviously go check out Nixta. I don't know if I've given a stronger endorsement to anything, but Texas, I mean, Austin especially, you're getting people from all walks of life kind of descending on Austin, and the city is, seems to me at least, like just, you know, has obviously previously had massive waves of growth, but it seems like now there's, I hate to say a second wave, but like another wave of just massive infrastructure growth. Is it exciting to be there? Does it come with its frustrations, or like what is it like to be in the middle of what seems like, you know, half the country moving to your city?
I mean, for myself, I try to not think about it, but I mean, it's definitely, you're seeing it more and more. I mean, obviously with the big moves of Tesla deciding to have a factory here where they're going to build all their trucks. Apple recently last year purchased one of the biggest plots of land ever and are about to build like this $1 billion facility here. And then you hear like Google also doing it. So it's like every big player is coming here, and that means there's going to be just this huge influx of people within, I feel like, the next 5 years. So it's cool to see where we're at right now, because we're kind of at the ground level of getting our business started and getting all the word out. So all these newer people that are coming here already have this kind of notion of Nixta. So it's really humbling and awesome to see people are excited about this. As to where it goes though, I mean, man, sky's the limit. I mean, where we're at too, the street we're on is definitely in the process of being gentrified. As I mean, where people talk to me about the street where we're at, 12th Street, like 10 years ago was a place no one used to go. Like, but now you see these little bars starting to pop up. We were the first restaurant on the street, really on this side of the street, on the east side of the tracks, that opened up in a few years. So it's cool to starting to see like this movement happen.
There's always good and bad with growth. I've seen the city change a lot in the past 10 years, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think the hardest thing to see right now during the pandemic is that, you know, a lot of businesses, local businesses, did shutter, and a lot of outside firms are coming in and sort of scooping up that land and taking away the thing that makes Austin so special, which is, you know, the phrases keep Austin weird. And that is, I feel like that is evolving. There's definitely still a lot of weird parts about Austin, but.
But now it's like turn Austin into Shake Shack.
Yeah, there is a lot of that happening, but I think the heart and soul of the city is still there. There's still a lot of people advocating for small business ownership. The city itself, I personally think, does a good job of wanting to keep it revitalized and keep it alive. And a lot of the grants that were formed during the pandemic were to keep historical landmarks open, different honky-tongs, different restaurants, different places that have been around and institutions of the city for 50, 60, 70 years. They're making sure that they're, you know, taking care of them. So
there's a lot of people that are definitely getting, unfortunately, like pushed out, like, because there is a lot of people that are coming here with money, and I mean all those jobs that are popping up here are all like tech jobs, so it's like that automatically, I feel like, leads to a certain notion of people who are gonna have these kind of high paying jobs. So it's like, where do you put, I mean, that's the, that becomes the other thing, it's like, where do you put all these people? Because it's like Austin literally is pretty much, I feel like, building outwards. So I feel like the only way it can go is like kind of up. So, I mean, you look at our skyline, there's cranes everywhere. It's wild to see like
everyone, Crane City.
Yeah. People say that the bird, local bird here, is the crane, because they're literally everywhere. You look in the outline, there's like probably like 50 or 60 cranes. So I think that's where the city's going, is just kind of up. So yeah.
Yeah. See. Well, thank you two so much for joining us today. We really appreciated your time.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Yeah. Next time you're in Texas, come say howdy. Come grab a taco. We're here all the time.
I'd love to show you.
We would love that. And thank you for everything you did during the blizzard to help people.
Least we can do.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
Okay, Daniel, we should kick off this portion of the show by talking about the state of the reopening and closing in the restaurant industry.
Great.
As we usually do. So as we mentioned already, Texas is wide open. They are now open at 100% capacity. You don't have to wear a mask anywhere based on state law. But there's a general reopening happening across the country that we're seeing. Boston, Massachusetts, where I'm from, they are open 100% inside. Chicago has opened up to 50% capacity. San Francisco is opening indoor dining for the first time. LA should be following suit soon. Louisiana bars can now reopen for the first time, regardless of the positivity rate. So before, they could only reopen if they were, you know, in some safer areas. And now you can open your bar no matter what. And restaurants in Louisiana are at 75% capacity.
You know, especially with the warm weather coming on, it feels like, I mean, it feels certainly whatever the next step is after light at the end of the tunnel, you know, like you see the light and you're like walking towards it for a while. And maybe like this is the time when you get bored and you're like, yeah, I see the light, it's still kind of far away. But I feel like we're there.
I hope so. But, you know, I listen to the daily. I read the reports that we are not out of the woods yet. So good to remember, the CDC is very alarmed at a lot of these reopenings, especially the Texas one, where it's like, why do you not have the mask mandate? Why? Just keep it.
Yeah. Giddy up. Just kidding.
Yeah. Cases are like where they were. I was listening today that they're where they were during the second big wave, you know, when a lot of people were panicking. It's just now, since we've been through the third wave, we're like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Perception is everything. So, I mean, I think
it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, there's confidence growing from the growing percentages of people that have been vaccinated. Boredom is setting in again.
The biggest story in my mind of this week, which was such a blip.
You don't mean
like,
that. You don't mean that.
About a website, a very short-lived, I must say, website called Recipesly. And I just want to read you the announcement tweet. It's from a guy named Tom Redman. Some personal news. Two friends and I created a new thing to fix online recipes. Smiley face emoji. Recipesly.com. Your favorite recipes except without the ads or life stories. Donut emoji. Feedback and retweets appreciated. Prayer emoji. Want to say what happened next? Tell us what happened next.
I mean, people were not happy about that.
So the idea of the site was that it would pull from all these recipe blogs from around the internet and just, I guess, scrape the recipe so you don't have to read the intro. And there's this funny discourse, mostly, I think, on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those classic things where I play the game of, am I a tech bro?
Like, you agree with them?
No, but I mean, quote unquote, fix the problem. Like, they fixed the problem, right? Their problem was they didn't want to read the stories and they just wanted the recipes. So they did fix the problem in their eyes, right? Like they fixed their problem.
I just want to also add how swiftly this happened.
Yeah.
Like the guy announced it, and I think within hours, the whole site was taken down.
Yeah. No, Recipeasley is no more.
He just got slammed on Twitter. Like the replies are just nuts. Okay. So he put up the original announcement at around four in the afternoon. By 7:42, he had a follow-up tweet. So, ellipsis, this has struck a chord. To the content creators, I'm sorry. Your recipe websites and blogs are amazing. We have nothing but respect and admiration for the time, money, effort, and years that go into creating great recipes and websites. We don't want to minimize your results for that hard work, and we've built Recipeasley carefully to make sure this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Clearly, our marketing Recipeasley doesn't demonstrate that respect at all. We missed the mark big time, and I'm sorry.
One of the great buzzwords, missed the mark. That wasn't it, Chief. Yeah, I mean, the only question I have with this is like, how did they expect to monetize and how did they expect to give back to the people who wrote the recipes? Because like, I can fully understand the argument about the life story, whatever, but taking the recipe and reposting it is just stealing. Like you are just taking someone's intellectual property and profiting on it.
This is interesting. It's worth clarifying, imported recipes are only visible to the user who's imported them. Similar to if a user had printed the recipe or copied it into a doc.
That's hugely relevant.
So it's just like a holding place for recipes that you've bookmarked, basically.
So you have to find the recipe.
But then why couldn't I just copy and paste recipes and put them in my own spreadsheet?
I think it's giving
something.
You your own
like recipe
kind of
box.
Recipe book online. Yeah, recipe box.
Yeah, he then that's an interesting product that he definitely sold wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he missed the mark with the marketing of it, as he says. It's amazing how much backlash they got. But look, like the people who are on Twitter often talking about these things are the people who make their money posting recipes. I mean, some of the things you always hear are like, it's important for people to stay on the page, right? It's important to give context. The thing that was most upsetting for me about this story was just like losing all the money I invested in recipes.
Maybe they'll have a comeback.
I hope so, yeah. What are other things? It's like museums with no plaques. No?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell me about what's happening with Gwyneth.
Right. Gwyneth Paltrow is in hot water, or maybe water heated with infrared, because she's not even in hot water. I take that back. But she was called out by the NHS, England's National Health Services, because she wrote a blog saying where she said that she suggested, and this is a piece in The Guardian, she suggested that long COVID could be treated with intuitive fasting, herbal cocktails, an infrared sauna. She said if her functional medicine practitioner had helped her with some of these remedies, and she went on a keto, plant-based, blah, 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 drank some kombucha and kimchi.
Was she a long hauler?
Yeah, so she had long COVID. So what happened was...
Do they call it long COVID?
That's what... I don't know if it's an English thing or it is, but...
The Brits.
Yeah.
Always
but
something.
I have heard long COVID before. Long have COVID. You not?
Okay.
Yeah, it's just people with like over a couple weeks.
I just heard like long haul. But yeah, it's irrelevant.
I haven't heard long haul. I don't know what
really?
Circles you're running in. No.
Okay. All right. Well,
I mean, long haul, I've heard the expression. I haven't heard that about COVID specifically.
Oh, really? Okay. Well.
Yeah. Long haul COVID?
I'm glad we can bring a diverse point of view to the show.
I have only heard long COVID. Anyway, yeah. Professor Stephen Powis, who is the National Medical Director for NHS England, he said, in the last few days, I see Gwyneth Paltrow is unfortunately suffering from the effects of long COVID. We wish her well, but some of the solutions she's recommending are not solutions that we'd recommend in the NHS. Oh, and here he goes, being poetic. Like the virus, misinformation carries across borders and it mutates and it evolves. So I think YouTube and other social media platforms have a real responsibility and opportunity here. What a strange, that is such a weird way of putting it. I think he's saying they have a social media platform, YouTubers and whatever, have an opportunity to shut up, basically. That's what he's saying, right?
I guess my question is, what is it hurting for her to tell people to try kombucha?
Amanda, I agree. Wholeheartedly, of course.
I thought you might. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like there is a verifiable treatment at this moment that can help long haul or long COVID sufferers, and that she's directing them towards some, you know, BS. Like, whether or not it's BS, it's not like she's distracting them from the real thing they should be doing.
No, she's not saying if you bathe in apple cider vinegar, you don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would be damaging.
And here she goes. She also suggested there was evidence for the efficacy of sugar-free, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, I think this is the key line. I've been doing some major research and finding some great stuff to support what I'm doing. And she's not even saying that this is going to work, you know, like she's saying it's working for me. I will say, I hate to say this, but amongst these ultra healthy people, a lot of these kind of keto influencers, not to lump her in with that, but whatever, do claim that that COVID won't touch them really because they're so healthy. So it's not the best look for her to have long COVID. I mean, you know, go off, but.
Well, I think that proves that those people are insane.
That's what I'm saying. I'm less likely to buy her candles or whatever, knowing that she.
Well, she never said that her stuff would prevent you from getting COVID. That's the whole thing. It's like she's just saying, here are some things you can try if you've already had it. She never went out there and said, oh, if you buy my.
Oh, I'm not saying she's saying that, but I do think a lot of these health influencers are more. A lot of these new agey health influencers tend to be more skeptical of COVID and say, like, look, if your immune system is up to snuff.
I'm just saying, don't you dare bring her into that group.
Really? You don't think?
I don't care.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, she's clearly.
I just think you're bringing them all together like, oh, it looks bad on her that she got it, since people who are in that, you know, genre think you can't get it if you're healthy. But who knows? Maybe she took it very seriously from the beginning.
I think personally, like, I threw out a bunch of my Gwyneth products after hearing that she had long COVID. But I mean, just to show you what kind of article this is, like, you know, okay, so then it brings up that she had to pay a substantial claim for some vaginal eggs. And then last year she began selling a This Smells Like My Vagina candle. It's just like, you don't need, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Is this context necessary?
Yes, because she has done a lot of dangerous stuff. And I think the dangerous things she has done should be taken seriously. I just don't think this qualifies, because she's not suggesting that people ignore health advice and instead follow some woo-woo regimen. It's just like, hey, it's not going to hurt if you eat more kimchi. Maybe it will help you feel better.
I don't think any expert would say that, that kimchi is a net negative either. And neither is UV or you know, radioactive sauna suits or whatever. Just sleeping in radioactive waste. That's what she says, right? Anyway, so I just, here's an absolute whataboutism argument that doesn't land at all, but no one seemed to have a problem, Amanda, with the 105-year-old woman who survived COVID and claimed that it was because she ate a lot of gin-soaked raisins.
The gin-soaked raisins, right.
Everyone's like, she's right, ha ha ha. But, you know, the second Gwyneth says that it's good to bathe in fermented antelopes, people are like, she's dangerous. So it's just, you know, I just want fairness in the world. That's really what I strive for.
Yeah. But again, I'm just saying, people should probably not listen to Gwyneth when it comes to their vaginas, but eat more kimchi, sure.
So anything north of the border, you're okay? You're down?
Yeah. Yes. Just want to add that disclaimer. Okay, what else is going on, Daniel?
All right. In much more important news, did you hear that Dunkin' Donuts is now selling avocado toast?
No, but okay. Cool. Interesting.
Yeah, that's it. No, my question is this about avocado toast. And I think it's time, Amanda, you give your, as someone who's been in this business for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
Give us a little rundown of avocado toast. My question is this the end for avocado toast, right? Like, beginning?
I think it's just now become a normal mainstream breakfast choice that is available everywhere and is delicious and wonderful. And we can stop saying this is like a millennial thing or an Australian thing or a trendy thing. It's just, it is a delicious food to have.
Avocado on toast is delicious.
Yeah. What this means about Dunkin' and what they're doing, like they also just introduced matcha donuts. So it seems like they're trying to throw a lot of shit at the wall right now. So I don't know how long it will be there or what it means for them.
Is it because we're hyper aware of a brand like this adopting trends, or has Dunkin' been, you know, adopting trends forever and we're just keenly aware of avocado toast and matcha? It seems to me Dunkin' hasn't changed in a long time. So like this does show that they're...
I think they're always trying to add something to their breakfast food array.
Yeah.
Like I remember a couple years ago when they started experimenting with the meatless meat options. It's just hard for me. I mean, as a Bostonite, it's a coffee place. Everyone gets their coffee there. I don't know a lot of people who eat the food there. But maybe because when I was growing up...
I used to smash Dunkies.
Really?
I went to school outside of Boston for 2 years. Yeah. Dunkies every day. Sausage and egg.
What'd you have? Oh, really?
Whatever. Yeah.
All right.
Flatbreads. Let's go. Yeah. I mean, even flatbreads. Like, I'm saying these things now. And, like, flatbreads were a relic of that time,
flatbreads.
Too.
Yes, flatbreads. Yes,
so
totally.
I don't think this is anything new. It's just, like, the avocado toast, there hasn't been an arrival to the food, kind of to the like mainstream food world, that has had as giant a rise as avocado toast that I've ever seen, you know, as astronaut. And while remaining good to you know, kind of highfalutin people, and also you can say it as like, you know, that restaurant's kind of basic. They do avocado toast. It's like it's managed to straddle a lot of worlds.
Yeah, it can convey a level of basicness, but then also anyone would find it delicious and have it for breakfast.
Now I find you go to trendy restaurants, like new restaurants that are kind of, you know, aware of media, aware of trying to be cool, and they'll have kitschy things on their menu like .. Yeah, we have an avocado toast. Right? Mm-hmm, like they can't just be like, and avocado toast.
Right. It has to be like a wink.
They have to be a little bit ironic about it. Here's a question from this CNN article. Amanda, guess how much avocado is consumed in dollars. How much avocado is consumed in America per year?
No idea.
Take a guess. You don't want to guess? Do you hate guessing?
No.
Do you hate guessing?
I hate guessing.
You hate guessing?
I hate guessing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess as a podcasting, it's not exactly the most fun. If you had fun in this segment, email us, digest@eater.com. $6.5 billion.
Oh, my God.
Big game.
Wow.
That's a big game. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. All right. Let's move on. Last dumb story with Dan. Not dumb, but somebody found... This is actually just a story about why the English are funny, but somebody found a bottle of Peace in their HelloFresh box in the UK.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was like a Coke bottle filled with urine.
What? Ew. Ew. That's horrifying.
Is it? I mean...
Is it not?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is horrifying. Yeah. What if you open your grocery box and there's a bottle of piss in it?
So according to this article in The Independent, the bottle was just kind of sitting on top of the box, right? Like it wasn't really in. And HelloFresh doesn't deliver BEVs, right? So it wasn't like...
Right, right. So someone was fucking with this person.
I think that a delivery worker took a piss in their car and threw it down somewhere. And it ended up in the bag.
Oh, I see.
I mean,
yes.
We're making assumptions here, but I think that's probably what happened.
Yes.
Anyway, so some guy in...
That's disgusting.
Some guy in the UK tweets, "Hey, hello, Fresh UK. I'll keep it simple. Why have I received someone's bottled up piss as part of my order? Look forward to your response on this one." And then the guy says, "Give me an address. I'll ship it to you and you can have a whiff in case you're skeptical." I guess why I don't think it's that gross is probably because I'm reacting to this dude, because like I just don't see any benefit in publicly tweeting. Like it's so easy for them to find the order and then get rid of the dude or whoever is on the delivery side.
Yeah. Like just send them an email.
And then he goes, "The last thing I would want and much later after this became a thing. The last thing I would want is for anyone to get sacked or in trouble as a result of this incident.
Okay. Yeah, because someone on Twitter yelled at you.
He said that HelloFresh has been very apologetic. That's shocking. And he said, I just didn't expect so many people to care. It's all taken me by surprise, if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just a good English expression there also.
Just never tweet.
That's the rule.
Just don't.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, you don't know. Maybe a lot of people are going to care. And then it's inviting a world of pain to you.
Amanda, I think we should wrap. I think that's enough. I think that they have heard enough shtick for one day.
They have. They have.
This has been a pleasure.
Thank you to Sarah and Edgar of Nixta. If you live in Austin, go check out what they are doing there. And we will be back in a couple weeks with more.
Cheers, which is the thing I never say. I can't believe I just said that. God, I hate that. I don't hate when people say cheers. It's not me.
Okay. And if you have any feedback, email us at digest@eater.com. Thank you, everyone.
Cheers.